When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When they show up to a place and nobody's got their hand out, they have no power there, right? It is pay for play. It's quid pro quo. If you don't need anything from them, they have no power over you. And that's why being a resilient individual is the most important thing for your life, but also for our society.
Let's go.
Welcome to Citizen. We've got a special guest today, BJ Baldwin. How would you define yourself? A professional truck, race car driver, race truck driver? What is it called exactly?
I've been in professional motorsports for quite some time. It's unlimited production truck or trophy truck racing.
Okay.
Long distance endurance racing in the desert.
So truck racing didn't sound right. I'm glad you clarified that.
Yeah.
Although it doesn't sound horrible. So you've done like the big ones a lot. I mean, you've been doing this for years. So
yeah.
How did you get into that?
You know what? It started as, kind of a hobby, with, you know, small buggies and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then I started doing really well and got into trucks and started kind of morphing it into a professional motorsports team with marketing partnerships with a wide variety of different companies.
So it's been like, I guess, carts and trucks for you mostly. It wasn't ever bike. Like a lot of guys, like Travis started with bikes and did other stuff, but you've been primarily four-wheel vehicles.
Yeah, I'm originally, I rode dirt bikes a lot when I was younger, not really any racing on dirt bikes and stuff like that. Obviously, Travis is legendary in motocross, supercross, and freestyle motocross. So, yeah, it started a lot of my, experience in driving. It actually started in lower class buggies with limited class.
Okay. I mean, I see those sometimes around. I used to see them a lot in South Carolina, actually, when I was growing up, but in Texas, pretty much everywhere, North Carolina too. Those kids are, I mean, it's amateur racing, but there's still prizes and shit. And they're like as young as 12 years old sometimes. They're racing in these circuits and stuff. So how early did you get started? Competitively, I guess.
Competitively, like in the limited class, I was 17 years old. Mm. And then I was at the elite level, like the tier one class trophy truck when I was 23 years old.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I mean, so how much a NASCAR, a stock car costs a fuckload of money for the season, right? I don't know how much it is per race anymore, but for the season, you're talking about like 15, 16 mil just to keep that thing on, like just going in circles, right?
Yeah.
What's it like for the truck? Like how much money is that?
To run it at the highest level, it's about $3 million.
Per year? But you guys do quite a few, quite like not nearly as many races too as NASCAR, right?
No, but we're in a much more brutal environment than NASCAR.
Jumping hills in the desert seems like you scare the shit out of people. Anytime people have been asking me what I was going to do today, I'm like, well, I'm going to interview BJ in the morning. They're like, oh, don't ride with him. I'm like, don't be a pussy, dude. Do you know Texas Dave? You know those guys at Rally Ready?
Yeah.
So here's one of my dreams. And we put out some videos about this, so I think people might understand. I want you to drive Texas Dave and Dave to narrate the whole thing in that stupid Australian accent he does, because it would just be the funniest mashup of all time to be honest. Yeah. I love that dude. Anyways, so this show is Citizen, and the general premise is you can bitch and moan about your rights and wait around for somebody to secure them for you, and you will be a subject under their rule, or you can secure them yourself by performing the responsibilities required of you. And that is what makes you a citizen, right?
Mm-hmm.
There is an active and overt act in citizenry that really comes down to personal responsibility, right? Like personal responsibility is, I guess, the glue that holds all of society together. And it seems as though well, it doesn't seem as though that has been objectively eroding rapidly over the past couple of decades.
Yeah.
Now you don't have a 9-to-5 or anything. You have an interesting job that's different than most people probably couldn't relate to it, but you do live a normal life. You know, you do have a family. So what have you seen in that regard? Like how just the erosion of people not taking responsibility, not, I don't mean like doing something wrong and owning up to it. I just mean, it's your responsibility to make sure you're a good person in a good position in life and so on.
Yeah. I mean the changes, for me recently, like, my son's in high school, he's 15 years old. It's very, very different than from when I was in high school. You know, I have a daughter that's 7 years old that's never been to school, you know, because the world's changed so much. And I don't want her to be exposed to, like, drag queen story hour. Mm. Like, I could put on a wig and do that myself.
Sure, yeah.
But, yeah, the world's definitely changed in the last decade, a lot in the last 5 years. So,
you say she hasn't been to school. You guys are homeschooling?
Yeah, we're homeschooling her.
Like individual, or do you have a pod or something like that?
In individual, like, so she has like an online class that her mother helps her with, and she does really well. She's, you know, reading, math, everything is far exceeded that of a second grader. So, which is great. You know, I'm happy with that. I wish she had a little bit more social education, you know, with a wide variety of different kids and stuff like that, which is what you don't get when you homeschool. You don't get that as much, but she's still really, really smart girl.
Yeah. Well, how do you, like, so a lot of people in this audience, and I think just a lot of people in general, want to do that, but don't know even how to start. Like, how did you guys, one, how did you decide to do it? And then what was the process like to get her, you know, into that program or whatever it is?
Well, her mother's really, really smart, and she handles all that. And that was, you know, our conversation a few years ago. Like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to send her to public school. And I think because of the dynamic and you know, I have a very colorful lifestyle. my wife and I are happily married because we don't live together. But we have a great relationship. She's really, really smart. And she has set all that up, and she takes care of all that. She's her primary educator. I support them in doing that. So she does a great, great job. I don't know exactly how or what, how you sign up to get that done. She's kind of in charge of all that. I should have brought her with.
No, it's all right. We'll ask her later. Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, the people who send their kids to public school or whatever, people that don't mind all this stuff, like, you're trying to shield your kid from stupid bullshit, right? But they're trying to shield their kid from criticism or shaming or something like that, right? I mean, it's like, I say that because I don't want to necessarily demonize people who are doing one thing or the other. I understand that you have this, like, intrinsic impetus to protect your child, however you see that, however you see fit, I guess. So it's interesting to me, in the same way, politically, if you, like, forget about R&D and all that bullshit. If you talk to ordinary, like, 9-to-5 people, they're like, I want the government to stop telling me what to do and stop taking my fucking money. It doesn't matter what your social beliefs are. Almost everyone thinks that, right? So the two things that matter the most in the world, which is your autonomy and your ability to provide for your family, the vast majority of people agree on, right? Mm-hmm. And I think in this way, in the education and care for your children, it's probably the same, right?
Yeah.
Like, we just have a little bit of a different, I mean, it seems drastic, right? But it's only drastic in that one little area. So it makes everything seem drastically different, but it's not, you know?
Yeah. No, it's different. It's, you know, I see all the stuff that's going on in the schools in the last, you know, 3 to 5 years. And it was, you know, I got my son that's 15. I got my daughter that's 7. And there's such a drastic difference in, you know, how the education system was when my son was 6 or 7 years old.
Sure, yeah.
As opposed to,
I mean, that fast. You know?
That's really fast. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like it's, you know, you have son and daughter, and education system is one way, and then they have kids, and then now it's different.
Right,
you know, yeah. It's like different in the same, you know, space and time. So it's difficult to understand how it got like that. You know.
Well, I mean, you know, I like to. There's a something called Hanlon's razor, and it says don't imply malice when incompetence will suffice. Right. So I wonder if a lot of this, like, there is certainly a concerted effort to program kids, and that, but that's not new, right? I mean, Henry Ford and the Rockefeller family and all these people who set up the American education system back in the early part of the 20th century, they wanted smart but compliant workers. That's what they wanted. Mm-hmm. And you can tell by how public schools are set up. Like, what does it mean to be a good student? You keep your mouth shut. You don't misbehave. You know, you do what the teacher tells you. You do your work, turn it in on time. Yeah. Certainly the grades are part of it. But the vast majority of how you get, aside from the academic part, which, by the way, is going away, like fucking Washington and Oregon, they don't do academic standards anymore because it's racist, I guess, which is pretty fun. God. But even in more normal places, the academic part plays a role. But what it means to be a good student, like if you said he's a good kid or whatever the fuck, mostly means compliant. You know what I mean? And my buddy Gerard Michaels, he's a comedian. He rants on this shit all the time about the concept of homework. Like, we're training kids that 9 to 5 isn't enough. They need to be thinking about work and working even when they get home on their free time. You know what I mean? Which I think is fucked up. Like, we're training kids to think that way from what, 6 years old, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very strange how, you know, how big of a change that we've had, you know, recently. And you know, I'm glad my son, I spent a lot of time with my son and my daughter, especially my son's wise to all this, you know, nonsense. And he's old enough now, and I train with him and try and show him a little bit of discipline and get him more. He's a really, really good wrestler. He's been in jiu-jitsu for a few years.
Not now. A bad shooter either.
Yeah, he's pretty good. Yeah, he was at Range Day. Mm-hmm. He's at Range Day I think it was over the summer. He's like commandeered my Infinity. He's like, this is mine now. No, it's not. That's the most expensive handgun I got.
Well, that's all right. As long as he's learning, I guess. Yeah, it's good to have the kids in active shit they're interested in, right? It doesn't really matter what it is, I guess. But I do think for boys, there's actually new-ish research from the past 3 years that details exactly why and how roughhousing with your son, especially when he's young, is a huge benefit. It gives him confidence. It teaches him low-level conflict resolution. It teaches him how to be patient, how to deal with stressful situations, even at that lowest, even just like going to wrestling and then coming home and doing the moves on him, right? Yeah. It's body slamming him on the bed and this shit. It teaches him not to be a little bitch, honestly, if I'm being like that. That's really what it is. And I don't mean physically, but physically and mentally. You know what I mean? It's crazy how something that silly and small can totally affect how a child turns out. You know what I mean? 10 years later.
Yeah. I'm way deeper than that. 'Cause I was like, very anti-confrontational when I was his age. And then, you know, I had a couple of events in my young adult life where I was like, I don't want to be this person anymore. You know, I want to be somebody that's can take care of himself. And, you know, I started hanging out with the wrong crowd and getting a bunch of trouble. And then I started boxing, and then I started doing jiu-jitsu. And I was doing jiu-jitsu before there was, you know, women and children and dentists and people that worked at the airport. It was all savages, which was very rough. And I completely changed who I was, you know, by the time I was like 22, 23 years old. And with Jaden, with my son Jaden, I wanted that for him. I didn't want him to go through that process. So, you know, like, I wanted him to be a very dangerous person, you know, early on in life as a young adult. And so I fucking murder him. I maul him. You know, whenever we go to class, and I've basically been his like private coach for almost 3 years now. And his mother had him in another school with just kids. And,
Another jiu-jitsu school, you mean?
Yeah, and she, you know, her and I, like, either get along really, really well for a year or we don't. And it was during one of the years that we don't, you know how that goes. And so she was like, you know, you can take him to your school. You can, you know, his membership is up at that school. And so I took him to my school and pulled in the parking lot. And he's like, okay, when's the kids class start? And I'm like, you're not going there until you have kids of your own. You're going to be swimming with sharks from now on out. And you're going to get mauled by grown adults. He was 13 years old. And he was like, okay, you know, let's do it. And he learned very quickly. It would be like teaching the average police officer how to run a handgun at a high level.
You're implying that the average police officer can't run a handgun at a very high level, and you are correct.
Yes.
But that not always their fault. They have a very limited training budget and time to train, although I would recommend you actually, if you're in a job that gets into gunfights, probably should be good at it.
Yes,
I won't say
absolutely.
Any more about that, but yeah.
And I love helping out law enforcement and teaching them to run a handgun at a high level. But yeah, they don't spend enough time. The you know, state and local government doesn't have enough funding for them to, they don't prioritize that, which I think they should. And that's the way it is nationwide.
Yeah. I mean, what do you, I've wondered about this, because you're talking about yourself being in a position you didn't want to be, making a choice to improve, and the way that you chose to improve it wasn't to ask for something. It wasn't to shield yourself from things. It was to sharpen yourself, right?
Yeah, like, which was difficult.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard choice to make, because then you got, especially when other people are involved, like you sign up with a gym with your friends or whatever it is, or people who know you or your family, then you, there's some level of accountability. Like, well, I can't be a bitch now. You know what I mean? I got to show up and do this every day.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, that was very, very difficult. But I wanted to be on the other side of that. So it was a lot of hard work, and it was a lot of pain, a lot of injuries. You know, I've torn cartilage in my ribs, torn both my knees, hyperextended both my arms, sprained my neck, broke both my feet, broke four toes, one of my toes I broke four times. Like, the list of injuries goes on and on, because it wasn't how it is today. You know, people don't get those injuries.
I mean, people weren't filing lawsuits against jiu-jitsu studios.
Yeah, that's terrible.
It's
so
weird. It's like,
now,
you showed up to fight and you're mad now that you got hurt. What the hell are you talking
about?
But I do wonder, like, going back to something I said a minute ago about not just assuming that the other side of your argument is, like, completely wrong, right? I think it's a mistake to assume just because you don't like someone's solution to a problem that a problem doesn't exist, right?
Yeah.
Like with policing, we're identifying one of them now. Mm-hmm. And it isn't, people make these, they make these judgments as if it's a moral or character issue for these cops who get into fucked up situations and don't do the right thing sometimes. Yeah. And maybe sometimes it is, right? Like, if you're just, we see videos of that all the time on Twitter, just some cop being an asshole for no reason or whatever the fuck. But the vast majority of the time, it's a cop who's put into a position that he or she is not qualified to handle, right? Mm-hmm. And it's really just that simple. So I wonder if, like, one of the things we talked about during, because I was, during 2020, I was trying to have reasonable conversations about this shit while, you know, people were burning down cities and shit. But still, the best, like, the most important time to be calm, and you know this, we can talk about that later, but the most important time to be calm is when everybody else is not calm, right?
Yeah.
So it occurred to me that maybe we should do a little bit better job in selecting who we put the badge on, right? Who we give a gun and trust them to be in public. But it wasn't, I don't think it's just or even primarily a moral or character issue. I think it's an issue of training, right? Like, you are a civilian, you were in a very fucked up situation, but you've had thousands of hours on the gun and handled it appropriately, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I like to think so.
Well, I mean, it worked out for you in your favor, at least. But yeah, it's like, and then you see somebody who's also trained, somebody who's even a cop, freeze up like that asshole at Parkland who stood outside, the people in Uvalde who stood outside, right? And weren't like,
yeah.
I mean, that to me, the inaction is a moral or character issue. But making a mistake in a gunfight, I mean, fuck, man, I've been in a bunch of them. I've made some mistakes, right?
Yeah.
Not like killed the wrong people or anything, but I made plenty of mistakes in gunfights.
But you know, from being in gunfights with people that were gunfighters, you know that problem is not nearly as difficult of a problem to solve as some of the problems that you've solved in combat.
Sure. No, it's just point and shoot, really.
Rifle.
Like you react, point and shoot, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's that simple, but the only way, and I've talked about this a million times, especially with civilian people who are in the TV and film industry, when they go to like Dev GRU or the unit or something like that, or even some Rangers, some Special Forces or whatever, and watch shooters like infantry people go through a shoot house, and it looks like we're reacting faster than we should be able to react, but it's not. It's just like it's hardwired into us. Like think of somebody with this is a bad analogy because it's not the same, but think of somebody with post-traumatic stress. They hear a loud noise and immediately flinch, right?
Yeah.
Like instead of flinching, we shoot, right? Or we identify a target and shoot. We just do it immediately, right?
Yeah.
You just program that into your brain over time. So it's repetition. Intentionality and repetition. That's what really does it, right? But so we have a crime problem that we're not addressing, you know, politically, right? And then we have these poor motherfuckers out there and with badges who don't have the training or the repetitions to do that job right. There's got to be a better solution to this shit.
Yeah, they don't have... I feel like they don't have the physical equipment and they don't have the biological equipment. Like, I heard in New York City, and I'm not sure if this is true, but I've heard a couple times that the New York City law enforcement officers, they change their trigger packs in their duty guns instead of like a factory Glock trigger. It's like twice as stiff.
A factory Glock is what, 4.5 pounds?
Yeah. So it's
so
like
it's 9 pounds?
It's like 9 pounds.
The fuck out of here. Why? What, like an old school 44 Magnum revolver or some shit?
Well, no. Yeah. Yeah. Kind of like that.
Holy shit.
Except the trigger take up is a little bit shorter. But I think they should all have 2011s, you know, because you know something like a platform like that, you're going to have a better result for the training that they receive. I think they have to have way more reps behind the gun, you know, because you see a lot of, and you know, we've all seen, you know, the badge cams of handgun manipulations under stress,
man.
And it's they're trying to put their magazine in backwards. They're shooting through a windshield while they're driving at, you know, 60 yards away from a target, knowing that round is going 100 feet over the deck.
It hits that glass that is at a downward angle, and it immediately travels upward into the air.
100%.
And I don't know where that bullet lands.
No.
I don't fire rounds if I don't know where they're going to land. That's like fucking one of the four rules, bud. This episode is also brought to you by BlackRifleCoffee.com, the best coffee in the world. As a matter of fact, they won both the gold and bronze medal at the Golden Bean Awards this year for their exclusive coffee club entries in the elite category. So the best coffee on earth literally was Circus Bear by Black Rifle, one of their ECS. So I recommend that you go sign up for the Black Rifle Coffee Club. Use the code CITIZEN. You're going to get those points off. And, you know, you get all the benefits for being in the coffee club. You get the free shipping. You get access to all the partner deals. You get access to the exclusive coffee club. You get access to any new products that come out before anybody else does. You know, it's a very large club that they have over there. And the coffees are premium. Every single one of them is good. You're going to get experience for you. You can do just the plain coffee club. And if you want your two bags of espresso or your two bags of silencer smooth or whatever it is you drink, you can get those two bags or one bag or whatever you want every month, or rather, you can use the ECS, the Exclusive Coffee Club, and get access to some of the most premium coffees on the planet and kind of learn what it is that you like. You know what I mean? So then you can order those premium coffees from Black Rifle as well. So, and we all know they got the best branding, the best merch, and they're buddies. You know, we're all friends here. We love Black Rifle. So go to BlackRifleCoffee.com, sign up for the coffee club, or buy something, do whatever you want. Use the code CITIZEN, you're going to get those points off.
Yeah.
I mean, really, so...
And that's not their fault. They're, you know, under a substantial amount of stress, they're trying to perform, you know, a task that will... They're trying to perform remedial action on a very dangerous situation. And I think they need to be better equipped, you know, physically and biologically and mentally to do that. We need to take better care of our law enforcement.
When you say biologically, what do you mean?
I think, you know... I think the training, like cognitively, I think the training could be a little bit better. And I don't know exactly how to solve that problem.
I know how to solve it.
How do we do it?
There's an older method that was really effective into a newer method that I was just talking to somebody about yesterday with Tim, actually. So one of the things we used to do, and we went to this Delta course called CAT-C. It was a shooting course. And you stand with your back to the firing line. You've got a big piece of cardboard or whatever the fuck it was, and it has shapes, numbers, and colors on it, right? Triangle, circle, square, whatever, no particular order, it's all randomized, and each one is a different color with a different number inside of it. And the RSO calls out a number, color. He calls out 1 to 3 things, right? And if he calls out 3, what you shoot has to have all 3, and if it isn't on your board, you don't shoot, right? You have to turn around, and you have 2 seconds to make that choice with 9 fucking things on it, right?
So it's complex solutions in a short amount of time. Yep. I like that.
Under stress, right? Yeah. It's loud, they're yelling at you and all this shit. And the newer version of it is even crazier. I can't remember exactly how Tim was explaining, but it's digital and dynamic. If there's like a laser on it, like if you it's a, for the sake of conversation, let's say it's the same general setup but digital. This one is you spin around and you look at your target, or in this case, I think it flashes up instead of you having to turn around, which is probably a little bit better.
Yeah.
It flashes up, and if you see your letter, number, color, whatever the fuck it is, but if it has a laser on it, you have to wait for the laser to go away to shoot, right? Okay. So there's adding more and more challenge to that. There's ways to handle this shit. And to be honest, the first one that I told you about, you can make that shit at Kinko's for $5.
Yeah.
And take it to your local gun range, or even when you're dry firing in your home, right? And have your fucking wife or somebody call out different shit and turn around. I mean, there's plenty of ways to do that, you know?
Yeah.
Is what I'm saying. But who the average... I know this because my friends are all tier one operators. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the average cop in Podunk, whatever the fuck, even in major cities, they don't know any of this shit.
No, they're like
nobody's making this available to them except for like Tim, Mike Glover, some other people who are actually training some of these cops yourself.
Yeah.
Right? But otherwise, they would just be like, I hope I don't have to shoot my gun today. You know what I mean? Which is not like, certainly you don't want to kill anybody if you don't have to. But I don't want to shoot my gun today for a cop, for anybody that's carrying that gun is the wrong answer. Right? That's just the wrong answer. I'm sorry. Like, I've been carrying a concealed weapon for 21 years now, and I don't think like that. I think, like, I hope everything goes well today, but if somebody fucks with something that I care about, you know, I'm going to take care of it, right?
Yeah.
That's just the way, that's the mindset you have to do that job. You cannot hesitate ever.
Yeah, and no shade on, like, you know, in my engagement a few years back, like, I don't hold any grudges. There's no emotions tied to it. And, you know, unfortunately, there's, you know, 3 kids that no longer have a father because of these complex circumstances. But, like, even the guy that was shooting at Tori and I that I had to neutralize, I don't hold any grudges on him at all. You know, it's, you can't really define. I knew the guy for 4.6 seconds. So, and he wasn't very nice for that amount of time. But, you know, I don't define him by that. It's just, you know, set of circumstances where you had to make sure you go home. And I think law enforcement officers, I definitely think that we need to do a better job in their training and having a complex problem like you were saying, that would be great to have them train on that. But honestly, I think they need to do a lot more dry practice, if any. Some of them, like I had my Nevada High Patrol guy like years and years and years ago when we first started hanging out, and he's like, I'm better shot than you. And I'm like, there's no fucking way, you're terrible. And so he came over to go to the range and he got his duty gun out, and he's like, I just got to get my duty mags or my duty ammo out. And he had a Smith & Wesson, not an M&P. It was, you know, the earlier, models, but he couldn't get his, magazine out because of years of perspiration had rusted his ejection button on his grip. And I had to come over there with a screwdriver and a hammer and get the fucking magazine out of his gun.
Kind of reminds me of Gladiator when that dude couldn't fucking get the hilt out of his, you know, when his shit was frozen. When they're trying to execute Russell Crowe in the woods or whatever, and the guy couldn't get his sword out.
Oh, yeah.
Like sometimes the hilt freezes to the blade. It's like, yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Rust is not your friend in a gunfight,
no,
buddy.
No, definitely not.
Not in your springs or followers or anything else.
Nothing.
Yeah, that's wild, man. You mentioned dry firing. It's always been my opinion, and because I've been working with weapon systems for a really long time. I think the real work is done dry, to be honest.
I think 90%, like 90% of my
and you're a world class shooter. I like seriously get into that because.
Yeah, 90% is 90% of the skill that I built as relates to balance, speed, and accuracy, presentation, getting rounds on target under a second has been 90% of it has been when you don't have a dramatic atmospheric pressure change in front of you. You know, it's hard to receive information and learn, especially early on in the game of trying to build handgun skills when you're just doing live fire. Like all of my skill that I built has been done in my living room with an empty gun, you know.
Yeah, I do that all the time. People think I'm crazy. I'm just like watching TV and I'm just like popping dudes in the head when I'm watching TV.
Yeah,
and
that
changes
that
magazines
me.
And shit. And they're like, what are you doing? Are you crazy? Are you obsessed with it? I'm like, no, I want to be good at it, man.
Yeah.
The fuck. Like, how do you get good at math? You do fucking math.
Yeah, I was with Michelle Watterson at a little fight party I had at my house this last Saturday, and I took her to the range and some other people with Tracy, and
she wants to get into it now that she's gonna stop or like taper off the fighting stuff. She wants to get into the shooting because she likes to shoot, right?
Yeah, she does, definitely. And I offered to help her out and train her and stuff like that, and I was doing dry reps while watching the fight for just 10 minutes. That's really all it takes. It doesn't take like an hour, 2 hours or whatever with me at least. And I was getting some reps in with my carry gun doing admin reloads and first round on target, and
just standing up and clearing your clothes and getting the weapon out.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, is an important thing too.
Yeah, that's very, very important. And I was doing that for 10 minutes while we were watching the fight, and she commented on it like, how often do you do that? And I was like I do it every day. You know, I do it every day for like 5 or 10 minutes, and you see the result on the range. You know, I don't even have to fight. Like if I went like 2 months without doing live fire, I show up on the range to I was just teaching Vince that just got in the gunfight in LA.
And they took his concealed carry permit away
because
he actually had to use it, which is a bizarre set of circumstances.
Oh my god, they're so
this is why
silly.
There's no reason to ever live in LA. Fuck that place.
Yeah,
anyways.
no reason at all. But Sean Whalen is a friend of his, and he called me. He says, "Hey, can you help him out? You know, he's just been through this." And I stayed with him for a couple of days and taught him a little bit how to shoot. Very, very nice guy. We got along really good. It was he's awesome.
Well, the good news is he didn't hesitate. That's one thing that's really hard to train, right? So he's got that out of the way. The accuracy was not great, right? But it was effective for what it was. You know what I mean? But he's probably never, he's definitely never been in a situation like that before. Most
no,
people
not with a handgun. The nice part about Vince, I think because of the result of the way he's reacted after getting to know him, he's been in a lot of gnarly situations in his life.
Really?
So he's been exposed to violence a lot. Okay. You know, he was a professional boxer for a while, and he had an interesting life back east, however you want to define that. But he's a very, very smart guy, and he was very receptive to everything that I was able to provide to him.
That violence of action, though, is the, like, but when we're, a guy comes through basic training or something, that's the first thing you teach. Well, that and handling the weapons safely. Like, people who are start taking up shooting for the first time, especially people who want to carry it every day, right? I always tell them, you should carry that weapon around your house 24 hours a day when you go take a shit, when you're cooking, cleaning, whatever the fuck you're doing, with no rounds in it for a month, 2 months before you ever take it out into the streets, right?
Yeah,
like it needs to feel like part of your body. You need to not have to check to see if it's on safe or if the mag's loaded or whatever the fuck, however you're set up. You should just know, always know, like in the same way that you know your front door is locked, same way you know that where your kids are, shit like that, right?
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
It's a big fucking responsibility, not to be taken lightly, and that shit matters, that you know, like you always know what condition it's in, because there's nothing more useless than a loaded gun. There's nothing more dangerous than one that's treated unloaded.
Yes. Yeah. And yeah, when I teach people, you know, I ask them, like, you know, what's the worst thing that can happen? A lot of them answer like, oh, if you think it's unloaded, and it's not unloaded, and you send around through the wall. And I was like, well, that's like the second most dangerous thing that can happen. The first most dangerous thing that can happen, in my opinion, is you got somebody that you have to perform remedial action on. They have a knife or a gun or a baseball bat or whatever, and you know, do your presentation click. And nothing happens. Mm-hmm. That's the most dangerous thing, because, you know, trying to get that thing up and running again, it doesn't take very much time unless somebody's running at you and they're going to put a knife in your eye socket or something. 21 foot rule, man.
I mean, it's like, for those of you that don't know, somebody with a blunt or any kind of melee weapon, whatever it is, even fist technically, but a melee weapon especially, if they're within 21 feet of you, the average person can get to you before you can draw, rack, and fire your weapon.
Basically. Yeah, 100%. That's another thing they asked me about, like, do you carry with one in the chamber? People that don't know them, and my reply to that is, guns work better when they're loaded. You know, just like cars work better if they with got gas in them. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, except for electric cars.
Yeah,
they work better when it's not freezing, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw that shit in Chicago, but they ever, like, the charging stations wouldn't work because it was too cold, so everybody was stranded in their fucking charging parking lots.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So I don't know too much about that. So, like, the... Not the hybrids, but the electric cars, they don't work very well when it's cold.
I don't know about the car itself, but the charging stations,
they can't
work.
Deliver charge.
Right, yep.
Okay.
Which is interesting and not great, right?
Yeah, that's not great at all.
That's like, especially if you live up north. But anyways, yeah, this, in basic, you get a rifle and you carry it around with no magazine or anything for about a month, I think, before you ever get access to ammunition, before we even go to the range. And during that time, drill sergeants are walking around, and if your muzzle's in the dirt, if your weapon's pointed in an unsafe direction, if it's not on safe, whatever it is, you get your fucking ass lit up, right?
Yeah.
And it's that's you don't need to do that. I don't think most people need to do that to learn that lesson. You just got to fucking be intentional about it, but you should carry the weapon around for a while.
Yeah.
And, you know, check yourself. Like,
yeah, 100%.
Be intentional. Like, every so often I'm going to fucking pull my weapon out, look at it, check it, put it back in, or whatever the fuck, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just get used to handling it. It should be an extension of your body, really.
100%. Yeah.
But I don't know if cops are doing this stuff, to be honest. Like, I don't know if they're trained, their TOs, when they first get on the force, are doing that, because they don't think of themselves as gunfighters necessarily, right? I mean... The global war on terror was interesting, because in previous wars, we would just show up somewhere, fuck everything up, and leave, right? We would march through a city. I mean, you've seen Band of Brothers. We would run through cities, leave a couple people there, fucking fuck off to the next city, run through that, so on and so forth. Now we take over a piece of territory, and we police it for a while, right? I'm not a cop. I'm a gunfighter. It was infantry in the 82nd Airborne, but we had to stay there and do that job. So I feel for those guys, because they think of themselves as peacekeepers, because they are, that's what they are, right? But it's way more complicated than that. Like, you got to be ready to fucking shoot.
Yeah.
You got to be ready to get into it. And if you're not ready, man, people get fucked up all the time.
Yeah, 100%. I don't know what, I mean, it's a good question to ask you. What's the difference between just your mission is going here and smashing this, or staying here and monitoring the place, like policing the place?
It's about
more complex,
it's about exposure, really, right?
Yeah.
So if we were going to assault a small town or something, we would do maybe an offset infill, helo in a couple clicks away, walk in from different angles, maybe L-shape the city or something like that. Maybe do a pincer, which is where you have a group that goes like this over the top, pinch like a crab claw kind of, and then fill it in from in between, right? Just like move in towards the middle. But we keep moving, right? Once we have areas cleared, we keep moving. And I guess the difference is you're a lot more aggressive. The actions and your mentality is a lot more aggressive when you're assaulting than when you're policing, right?
Yeah.
When you're policing, you're like, you're trying to give people the benefit of the doubt. I don't want to unnecessarily hurt anybody. And I can't tell if that dude is, you know, a fucking terrorist or not.
Yeah.
Because it's not like they wear a fucking uniform, right?
No.
So that part's way different. And I feel for these cops, because that's always their job. And with the legal requirement of presumption of innocence, always. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a job that I would want to do, certainly.
Yeah, I try and make them as comfortable as possible. Like if I get pulled over at night, I turn on the interior lights because I got my windows, you know, super tinted because it's 300 degrees in the daytime here in Vegas in the summertime. But I turn in all the interior lights, I roll all the windows down, and then I make them aware that I have a gun by putting my CCW behind my driver's license, so it's their discovery when they ask for my driver's license and I get pulled over a little bit. And I give them my driver's license and they see that there's two cards there, and they're like, oh, okay, you know, so that's, I don't say I have a gun, you know.
Yeah, you don't want to blurt it out. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I've done that before. Just like let them know. And I only one time is a guy asked me to give it to him, not give it to him, but like, hey, could you step out? And I'm like, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
He's like, can I reach in and grab it? Like, yeah, go ahead. Like, I'll just lift my shirt up from up here though, obviously.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, go ahead, grab it. And then that only one time, but I've been pulled over or been in interactions with cops with a gun many, like fucking probably 24 times. And only once has that happened. Usually they're just like, all right, cool, man. Nobody who announces to the cop that I'm carrying a gun is intent on using it, I guess. That would be weird. That's probably never happened before.
That takes away the element of surprise.
Yeah, that would be not great. But yeah, it's a good idea. I'm not trying to be an apologist for shitbag cops. Yeah. But understand that job is fucked up, man. Mm-hmm. Like put yourself in that position where you know you're a good guy. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know you're a good guy. You and good guys and bad guys look the same.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So maybe compliant is not the right word. I would never encourage somebody to be compliant with the government, because fuck the government, right?
Yeah.
But understand that dude is a guy with a family who's trying to get home tonight, not trying to take unnecessary risk, and you do the same.
Yeah.
Don't take any unnecessary risk. Everybody, it's like good communication relationship. Everybody stay up here, right?
Yeah.
It seems simple, but if people get flustered and shit.
Yeah, and if you got like a shitbag cop, and you know they're out there, the vast majority of them aren't, they're awesome, but you know I've been pulled over by some that weren't awesome, and I'm down to fight them, but I'm not down to fight them during the engagement of a traffic stop.
Sure.
I'll do it in court and be like, hey, he was off, this is what happened, you know. Luckily that hasn't happened to me, you know, where I've had to do that. And you know, I own it. Yeah, I was 123 miles an hour on the highway. Or you know, I've had
officer. Like I had to see how fast this thing could go. You understand?
Yeah, right? Yeah. They usually don't. I usually don't get pulled over when I see how fast it goes, because I'm already 3 miles down the road by the time they pull on. But yeah, I'm always. I own it. You know. I've never disputed any traffic tickets in my life, and I've had a lot of them. I haven't followed a traffic law since 1996.
You know? Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah.
You know, I think that they're mostly suggestions, I think, right?
Yeah.
I mean, who's obeying the speed limit?
Well, not, honestly, not one if you motherfucker look at it, on
the
no road one
is obeying. Well, yeah. There's the, if you go to Texas, there's a lot of like old Mexican ladies who drive 40 miles per hour in the right lane. They're the only person, actually, I don't even know if that's against, or if that's the, I think there's a minimum as well, right?
45 maybe? Yeah, there's a minimum, yeah.
So maybe they're breaking the law too. Nobody's in that sweet spot.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny. Yeah, but understand that's a difficult job, you know, and I feel for those guys. I appreciate people like you and Mike Glover and Tim and all those people for fucking helping them out, because, you know, I don't know, like, the defund the police stuff is the dumbest shit of all time. We want to improve policing, so we're going to remove money from them. And what other? Yeah,
that's not punitive damage to a police officer.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see it as punitive damage to like remove the department's funding. Like at the end,
that's
the
punitive
end
for the community.
Yeah.
Right?
Like what hurts the community. That doesn't help them. They need more funding, not less. More training, not less.
I was talking to a cop from Brooklyn yesterday, and he's like, the all these, and it's frankly mostly white liberals in big cities. He goes, and they're calling everybody else racist, but all of their actions, the end result is that they're hurting black and brown people in their communities, right?
Yes.
Like, what the fuck? Do you really not see what you're doing here?
Yeah, and there's such a lack of common sense in the world and in our nation right now. There's, you know, some of the policies, some of the, you know, stuff that's going on. It's like, why would you think that would work? Why would you think that would perform or have a desirable result on the problem that you're trying to address? I don't get it at all.
You mean like we're trying to make our country stronger and more resilient, and we let 8 million illegal immigrants in?
Yes, that is definitely. Right?
That seems like an odd choice.
It's very.
And then the Supreme Court even just ruled yesterday that Border Patrol can go down there and start fucking up the border security of Texas again, right? Cutting their barbed wire, whatever the fuck, concertina wire.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that yesterday. Mm-hmm. That they're, you know, on. Man, that's
a conservative Supreme Court, a 6-3 majority conservative Supreme Court decided that the federal government has the right to fuck any border town over or any border state over, basically.
That's outrageous.
It seems pretty wild to me, you know. But yeah, people aren't making very good decisions, and I can't. Some of it seems intentional. Some of it seems like people are pussies. Maybe, I don't know, but I really don't know. But the point of it is, I can't stop the Supreme Court from making decisions. I can't stop the president or anybody else from doing that shit. All I can do is make my community more resilient. That's all I can. That's all anybody can do, really, right?
Yeah.
Unless you're in a position of extreme power somehow. And that's what I tell people this a lot. Like, if you say you're conservative or libertarian, you believe in small, limited government, right, and all this stuff, it's one thing to believe it, it's another thing to do it, right? And a lot of people who are on the fringe of these conversations always want to take it somewhere, like, combative or violent or something like that. It's like, first of all, you are in no way prepared for this.
I was just going to say that.
Like, you have no clue what real violence is. You know what I mean? And the second part is, if you dictate by violence, you always have to dictate by violence. It never ends, right? Like, if you train, you have one of the most well-behaved dogs of all time.
Oh, thank you.
And I assume you train that dog with treats and not with a whip, right? Because that's how it works. Discipline comes as a result of, there's a stick and carrot always, right? Like, there should be some kind of punishment for kids and anybody else. But the way that you actually train somebody isn't through fear, right?
Yeah.
And then they react in fear. You train them by pleasure benefit, typically, right? Whether it's food or a reward of some sort.
Dopamine and serotonin.
Correct, yeah. So, I don't know why we've been doing the things that we've been doing like this, the loudest part of this movement keeps openly wondering for or calling for some kind of political violence, right? And again, you're not ready for it, and you have to always engage in violence after that to maintain that peace. The best way to handle that situation, from my perspective, is to find problems that the government is solving and solve them yourself in your community before those motherfuckers get there, right?
Yeah.
And it's kind of a play on Reagan's old statement, like, the most dangerous or the scariest words in the English language are, I'm from the government, I'm here to help, or whatever. But
yeah,
if the government or, you know, any bad actor, fucking unions, fucking political people, PACs, whatever the fuck, when they show up to a place and nobody's got their hand out, they have no power there, right? It is pay for play. It's quid pro quo. If you don't need anything from them, they have no power over you. And that's why being a resilient individual is the most important thing for your life, but also for our society, right? The more, like, once we reach a critical mass of empowered individuals who are resilient against this bullshit, then that bullshit stops. It is the ultimate inoculation against tyranny, right? So I really wish all of these conservative influencers would stop talking about civil war and shit like that and start talking about personal responsibility, because none of them that I've seen talk about civil war have ever fired a gun in anger in their life.
Yeah. Yeah. And how do we orchestrate that war? Are we shooting all the people with purple hair?
Yeah. It's like, well, that's a good question. This is one I ask a lot. Somebody says civil war, I'm like, all right, cool. Between who and whom and over what exactly? Right?
Yeah.
Because North versus South and over slavery and taxes, okay. That
was way more simple.
That makes sense. I mean, it sucked, but at least it made sense.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck? Or are we just going to go Thunderdome and see who fucking... Because if you... Nature abhors a vacuum. And if you disrupt power centers like that, it has to be in a way that puts in a better, more efficient power center. Otherwise, chaos, right? And then it'll be might makes right. Whoever the strongest is, or sometimes luckiest, but strongest typically, will just kill everybody else or kill all the enemies, and everybody else will fall in line.
Yeah,
is that the kind of society you live in?
Yeah. I mean, we've seen that in the sandbox over there, right? Oh, yeah. You've had a lot of experience with that. And you take the, you know, the guy that's running stuff that's evil and take him out. Now you have a vacuum. Now you get some other shit bag that just falls in line.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so. Saddam Hussein killed thousands of people. Millions died after he got executed, right? So it's like, in the grand scheme of things, what is the point? Is the point to be morally superior, or is the point to protect human life, I guess? They're not always the same thing, right? Sometimes you compromise to protect human life. Like, it's not immoral to take life always. Sometimes it's the right thing to do, but sometimes it's not, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we don't make good decisions as a country when it comes to foreign policy very often anymore. If we ever did, frankly, I don't know if we ever did, but we certainly haven't in my lifetime. Pretty much everything we've done in my life, actually everything we've done since Vietnam has been fucked.
Yeah. do you know much about Reagan and his policies? I haven't studied a whole lot of that.
So it was mostly, there's three parts of the Cold War. The first part was called containment, and it started in the late 40s, early 50s, Eisenhower, Truman and Eisenhower. And the idea was, the OSS turns into the CIA, where we're going to fight these micro wars to stop the spread of communism across the globe, right? So we have, we're fighting Sandinistas, we're fighting in South America, we're fighting overseas, then we end up in Afghanistan fighting over there and all that shit. And then Kissinger came up with this idea with Nixon called détente, which is basically, I think it's a French word that means a cooling off period or a period of something. I don't remember what it is. French people, fuck them. You know what I mean? I don't want to learn that shit. But Reagan's was called rollback. And rollback was, we're going to outspend these motherfuckers. We're gonna spend so much money on an arms race and on technology that it bankrupts their economy and they have to fucking change leadership. And it worked. A lot of people argue that you couldn't have done rollback without the first two, but, and maybe they're right about that. Who knows? I mean, that's, life is weird like that. But rollback was the effective one. That Star Wars bullshit, like putting satellite lasers, weapons in the sky, like Reagan talked about all the time, that was never even a thing. Like, we were trying to develop the technology, but we were never anywhere close to that shit. But we did it because we wanted to make the Russians do it. And we knew the Russians didn't have the money or capability to do it. So they went bankrupt. And then Gorbachev gave up the country, basically.
Yeah.
Right? So that part was good. Now, a lot of the other stuff, sending Ollie North out there with a fucking, with full autonomy to sell cocaine and weapons to Iran and Iraq at the same time and shit like that, so we could raise money for all of our wars, so we didn't have to get approval from Congress, probably not the most ethical thing in the world.
Yeah.
Tripling the national debt, raising taxes 5 of 8 years, probably not very conservative either, but banning machine guns, also kind of a cunt move, frankly, but, you know. It was effective in ending the Cold War, but I don't think Russia was ever that big of a threat, to be honest. I mean, they have nukes, so they're a threat in that way. But in conventional warfare, we're seeing how capable they are. Dude, they're fighting Ukraine, which is, what, a tenth of their size? And completely militarily incompetent. They should have rolled through that country in 3 weeks, right? And they couldn't even get past the Donbass region.
Yeah, that's wild. I did not expect it to go like that.
I did. I called it. As soon as they started, I'm like, Russia's incompetent. They fucking suck at fighting. They still fight wars like World War II. It's attrition, right? Matter of fact, we just got reports last week that Spetsnaz guys are refusing orders. They're trying to do human wave attacks to push the Ukrainian line back a little bit to try to put more pressure on them to settle in a negotiation.
Human wave attack, what's the definition of that?
Fixed bayonets. Let's do this. Right? We're going to get online and start charging these motherfuckers, which is insane in modern warfare with drones and like landmines all over the fucking place. I mean, that's crazy. Like, no, you would never do that in modern warfare.
Yeah.
But the Spetsnaz guys were like, nah, we're good. You know, it's pretty rare in an authoritarian country where, especially the special operators, are refusing orders. That's not common. You know what I mean? In any country, actually, but especially in one of those where it's pretty locked down. But we've seen that over and over with Russia. The fucking Prigozhin guy, who was the leader of the Wagner Group and shit, rebelled, marched on Russia, kind of, and then died mysteriously in a plane crash. You know, they're incompetent. They don't know what the fuck they're doing. But still, it's like, we've, and we're kind of setting them up as the boogeyman again. Like, we've got to defeat Russia to save democracy. Like, what the fuck? How exactly is Russia threatening our democracy? We don't have a democracy, by the way. We have a republic.
Yeah.
But let's say we did. What's Russia doing to do anything about that? I don't think about Russia, to be honest.
Yeah, me neither.
I think about China stealing all of our intellectual property and spying on us and buying up our farmland. Think about that a lot.
Yeah, that's strange.
It is strange. So, you know, I like that some states, a lot of people are lobbying about that farmland thing now. It's a good segue back into the main conversation. And now states are starting to pass bills. Even California's working on a bill right now to stop that from happening, from foreign governments or funds that are positioned by or held by foreign governments from owning any kind of farmland in our country. I think that's probably a good idea.
I think so too.
Yeah. But it goes to show you, like, a little civic activism, when it makes sense, can be a good thing. But it starts all the way down at the lowest level.
Like, what is the purpose of China purchasing farmland?
Man, I honestly don't. So they can fucking experiment on our food, probably, I guess. Or put weird shit in our food. Why else would it be?
Yeah, I mean, I try and eat as clean as possible. Specifically the last 5 years, I've noticed a big difference in how I feel.
Yeah, just don't eat anything that didn't exist 200 years ago.
Yeah.
And typically you'll be fine, right?
Yeah, I noticed a big difference in how I look and how I feel, and just eating different in the past 5 years. I've got visible abdominal muscles like the last 4 years that I didn't really put a significant amount of work in to get, you know, and that's just like food being, in my opinion, the most powerful thing you could put in your body is the right food at the right time. Mm-hmm. And even more powerful than going to the gym and struggling, you know, every day and working your ass off every day. Like, food is 80% of it. Like, I noticed you got your first form shirt on. That's one of my partners as well. They are the most awesome company that I've ever worked with.
Yeah. The quality of the supplements and the availability and stuff like that, but the culture and attitude, right?
The culture is the bomb.
Like, Sal and Andy are good dudes. Andy's a really good friend of mine. So, like,
yeah, Andy's
he's serious about this shit.
Yeah.
He's serious about it. And then it proved his life. He was in a bad situation. He was a fat fuck, right?
Yeah.
10 years ago.
Yeah.
He was like, you know what? Fuck that. I'm not going to do that anymore. The success of that company, like, Andy and Sal are both really smart business guys too. Sal's a great fucking logistical businessman too. I think maybe the biggest part of their success is Andy deciding not to be a piece of shit anymore, frankly.
Yeah.
Right? Like, just like, fuck that. And people see that, like, you know what? I'm not going to be a piece of shit anymore. It's contagious. And you do that for your kid, right?
Mm-hmm.
You go through this shit when you were younger, where I don't want to fucking, I want to be confident, or whatever it was, you decided to tell yourself and you improved it. And then now your kid will never have to deal with that, right?
Yeah.
Because you set you set him on the right path.
Yeah, 100%. And that's like the most powerful moment of my life is becoming a father. And that's another moment where, you know, I've changed significantly, you know, trying to live by example, like, you know, and I work out with him, you know, a lot, and trying to educate him on nutrition and human performance and all this stuff. And he's a solid athlete right now, and he's getting better and better. He was a little chubby there for a little bit, but I love Andy. I love Sal. I love everybody at First Form. They're like so rad, like awesome. I go to Summer Smash and Fall Fest and all these events with them, and they're a lot of fun. They're awesome people.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, it's setting that example, though, is what matters. And it's like, you got to think of it that way. It's good to improve yourself, for sure, but there's reasons for that, right? It isn't just so you feel better, necessarily, or look better, or can, you know, or especially not based on what other people might think of you, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people do it for vanity reasons. But the reality of life is that every important thing you do will be in the service of other people, your family, your community, strangers on the fucking street. Mm-hmm. Right? Especially if you're a tough person, I guess. I don't know how to really... If you're somebody who's willing and able to do violence on the behalf of others, that's a responsibility you should take seriously. Like, if you're capable of that, you should be good at it, one, right? Yeah. And two, you should take it fucking seriously because the world can be very dangerous and people need to be protected. And then just the idea of once you get into that protector mindset, it starts to permeate the rest of your life. You're not just a physical protector anymore. You start to shield people from other existential threats, bad ideas, right? Or pain or whatever it is. Like, we lose so many friends to suicide. It's like, okay, I can fucking interdict that, right? Because I've been in that position. I know what it feels like to be spiraling down that drain. All you need is somebody to come kick the fucking... Kick your ass out of that shit sometimes, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It puts you in the right mindset. I think it is. Some people are parents, some people aren't, I guess. Our birth rates are going down pretty low. I recommend you having some kids if you can manage it. But
yeah,
it's like that'll be, people always say that'll be the most important thing you do in your life, and they're right. You know what I mean? Because you're
100%.
You're creating a force multiplier to send out into the world for good, in my opinion. Right.
Yeah. And that's, you know, my son is like, why I'm so good with a handgun is not for me. You know, that's for my son, my daughter, you know, their mothers and people around me. You know, I'm really, really, really fast with a handgun because of them. Otherwise I wouldn't be nearly as proficient.
Yeah. And it's, I think that's a good reminder, to be honest, of why you do the shit you do. If you're in the gym and it sucks, you know what? I don't really care about doing this. Like, well, or on the range or at work or whatever the fuck, how whatever it is you're doing to provide for or protect your family, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you get in those low moments, feel unmotivated, that's what's got to be in the back of your head, right? I mean, that's what it was. Even like as a soldier, it's like, I'm not afraid to die. I can't be, right? Because I'd be paralyzed in fear all the time. But I am mortified by the idea of letting my men down. You know what I mean? And now I think most fathers probably feel like that as well, right? And you should. That should be, like, there's got to be something behind you chasing you and something ahead of you pulling you, right? It's push-pull. It works in every facet of life. It's from Newton's laws of motion to your fucking muscles to sociology. Put that fear of failing behind you, right, and let it chase you a little bit.
Yeah, 100%.
And then see your happy family in front of you and run towards them. I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, this has been a great conversation. I really appreciate coming over here.
Yeah, thanks, bro. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure, anytime. We got to get together in Austin at the studio sometime and do a funny one.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Ross likes to say crazy shit to people, so that'll be fun. But in the meantime, tell everybody where they can find you, and if you got any events coming up and all that shit.
My season opener is in March at Mint 400.
Where is that? The Mint?
Mint. It's a really, really fun race out. And plus, it's in Vegas, which is great.
Well, I mean,
me.
It's Hunter S. Thompson really enjoyed that one.
Right? Yeah.
If you've seen Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, it's based around him going to cover the Mint 400.
Yeah.
He didn't really cover much of it, but, you know, that's kind of his style, I guess.
Yeah, and you can find me on Instagram. I'm at BJ Baldwin, at BJ Baldwin 97 on Twitter, and Ballistic BJ Baldwin on Facebook, and I'm same on TikTok, at BJ Baldwin 97 on TikTok and YouTube as well.
Sweet, thanks, man. I appreciate you coming today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yes, sir, and thank you all for listening. This has been Citizen.